This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
All right, my friends, we are halfway home on a Thursday, a Halloween Thursday. Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan. Great to be here with you. Baseball season is over. It's always kind of a bummer when it ends. I'll go into a deep depression probably like Monday. I'll be fine this weekend. I got a lot going on this weekend. A ton, actually. I'm Woodsy. That's Paul Reindel. Bald Reindel this morning.
Hey.
It's good to have you here.
Great to be here.
Ben Higgins.
It's weird. Well, I'm actually glad it's over. I don't think I wanted to take any more of the Padres not being in the baseball season.
Oh, I can't.
Once the Padres were out of baseball season, I kind of wanted to end.
I needed seven.
Pretty quickly. I know you like it to last as long as possible. The good news is, tomorrow is November.
Mm-hmm.
You know, holidays will be on us before we know it.
Yep.
And then we'll have our Christmas extravaganza on December 20th.
On vacation.
And then we come back in January, head out to fantasy camp, third week of January.
Yeah.
And you get back from that, and it is
it's
baseball time. It's spring training time. Obviously, before then, we'll have lots of coverage of the GM meetings and baseball's winter meetings and all the moves that the Padres will make during this offseason to try to bring back a team that can challenge now the defending world champions in their own division in 2025.
I'm just glad I've got my kids' baseball to focus on and coaching and things like that. I have to be around the game. Our Tier 1 season, we're probably going to do another tryout, Paulie, in December. So we'll have that to look forward to. Going to be moving up a level. So we're going to be looking for some talent on the Tier 1 baseball team. We did a tryout last year. It was a friggin' blast. We won two championships, a couple championships for San Diego. Probably doesn't mean as much, but it's something.
No parade.
When all the teams in the league are from San Diego,
yeah,
you can't really count it as a championship for San Diego. It's inevitable.
Somebody's going to bring one.
The San Diego team is going to win that championship.
Hey, why not us?
Why not us? Not like us, right? But now we're going up a level. Should be even dirtier. So I'm looking forward to
the challenge.
Are
you saying you need me now?
No.
No.
I would have given you a couple ABs last year. Not anymore. No, this would be too much for you. Sorry. Sorry.
I'd love to see you get an AB at a fantasy camp, though.
Almost more than anything.
Maybe one of us on the mound.
Oh, elite. Who do you think you have a better chance hitting, me or Paulie?
I don't know. You're both just going to drill me, so it doesn't really matter. Got no chance of hitting either one of you when I know the first pitch is right in my ribs.
Not on purpose. We would never. We would never, ever, ever.
I'd just go up with a bulletproof vest on
and just
wear it.
We would never hit you, ever. Not on purpose.
I'd be stepping in the box so far, just bailing out on every pitch.
Yeah, that would be fun to see.
Wouldn't look pretty.
I'm excited for that.
Get a GoPro on him.
Oh, it'd be so good. I mean, if you can't hit my 63 miles an hour, I don't know what to tell you at this point. But, I hate when the season ends. I just do. I love watching the games. The World Series games were it was a crap World Series, but there were some really, really incredible moments that I will never forget. And I'm sure Aaron Judge is never going to forget dropping that fly ball. I'm sure Anthony Rizzo will never forget not running to first, and Garrett Cole not covering first, pitching one of the best games he's ever pitched in his life. He was dominant to that point. The Dodgers felt inevitable with the broken bat single from Tommy Edman, and just the way that they played, that's how it ended up, man. And congrats to them.
Well, again, it won't be long. In fact, it never takes more than 15 minutes after the end of the World Series. Every single time, go to like ESPN.com, one of the first stories you will see are odds makers setting the line for the 2025 World Series champion, and came out yesterday, as you'd expect. The Dodgers are the favorites to win the 2025 World Series.
Sure.
Even though no one's gone back-to-back in a generation, 25 years, they were the number one choice. Your San Diego Padres, though, came in as the number eight choice to win the 2025 World Series, plus 1,400, which actually is pretty good for a Padres, a starting point odds-wise to win a World Series.
Going to be interesting this offseason, obviously, as is every offseason around here under the A.J. Preller regime, and how creative they can get, what they can do. I tried not to let myself slide down into the pit of despair when you see what the team up north has done and what they have still and what they have coming back. But yeah, I mean, weird stuff happens in baseball all the time. I think all I'm asking for, and I think all Padres fans can ask for, is a chance to play in the tournament every year. That's kind of what your goal is at a baseline. The fans in this town beyond deserve it. 56 sellouts last year. You cannot backslide. And win-loss record, that's not what I'm talking about, right? Like, you would hate if they backslid win-loss record, but there needs to be a really concerted effort. Now, I'm not saying you have to go and do what the Dodgers have done, but what I am saying is it at least has to appear that your foot is jammed down on the gas pedal. It has to at least appear that you are going for it all.
Obviously, these odds will change depending on the moves that are made by teams during the offseason. I'm curious, you haven't seen them, have you?
Who?
The odds.
No.
Okay, so I told you the Dodgers are the favorite, plus 400, and the Padres are the eighth choice. There's a big drop-off after that. So they have, like, the top eight teams are kind of in a grouping. Can you name the other six teams, do you think, that are ahead of the Padres in 2025 World Series odds?
The Phillies?
Phillies are one of them, plus 1,000. They're fourth. The Mets are just in front of the Padres, plus 1,200.
Okay, Phillies, Mets.
The Guardians.
The Guardians are not. They are well behind the Padres.
Yankees. The Yankees.
The Yankees are plus 700, second choice.
Okay, so Dodgers, Yankees, Phillies,
Mets. So you've got three more.
The Brewers.
The Brewers are not. They are well below the Padres.
The Astros.
Ooh, the
Cubs. Astros are 12 plus 1,200. Cubs are plus 2,500.
Oh, Braves.
Braves are plus 750. You got all but one of them now.
Who am I missing? Is it a surprise team here?
It's definitely not one of the power players,
Seattle,
to be sure. No, it's the
Kansas City.
It's the Orioles at plus 1,200.
Yeah, makes sense.
With their young talent.
Yeah.
But those are the seven teams currently ahead of the Padres for next season's odds.
I saw a tweet last night that broke my heart. And our buddy, and Paulie grew up listening to Softy, Dave Softy Mahler up in Seattle, who is a legendarily diehard Mariners fan. Tells it like it is, as hard on the team as he can be.
I mean, Woodsy, you get crap for being like the fanboy on the radio. Like, Softy's the OG fanboy.
OG fanboy.
He does not care about what anyone thinks. He's going to talk. He's a season ticket holder for the Seahawks and the Huskies and the Mariners. Like, he talks like a fan. He reacts like a fan.
Yeah.
He comes on. He rips the team a new one when they need it.
He tweeted last night, "I'm 51 years old. Will I ever see the Seattle Mariners play in a World Series game?" And I mean, he like did a poll and people were like, "No," which is insane to think about. And you think about how play in a World Series game. Dude.
Oh, I think he will.
Do you?
Yeah. They're they're close enough to the playoffs consistently that they're going to get in at least. I mean, assuming, you know, Softy lives a normal lifespan.
Call it 25 more years.
I would say they will be in the playoffs a bunch of times. And we know the randomness of the postseason. They will have that year where, at the very least, they can get to the World Series.
So
the American League isn't, right, especially right now.
It's not.
It's not, you know, a league. I think it's a much tougher road right now.
In the National League.
In the National
League. By far. But
not just the Dodgers, but the Mets. The Braves are, Mets spend a ton.
Cubs.
The Braves are a well-run organization.
Brewers are always sneaky good.
I think the National League is a much tougher league to get through right now than the American League.
I do too. But that being said, he also knows the ownership hands that they're in. He knows the general manager's hands that they're in. If you think about when Paulie grew up, that kind of golden age of Mariners baseball, which really wasn't all that
special. That was when it was much tougher in the American League.
That's true.
Because you had both the Yankees and Red Sox to try to get through.
I mean, a team with Hall of Famer
Randy Johnson, Alex Rodriguez. On down the line.
And then so many good role players like Mike Cameron, Dan Wilson, who's now manager for the team. Like, they couldn't even get to a World Series. They won 116 games with Ichiro, future Hall of...
Hall of Famer.
About to be, I think. Rookie of the Year, MVP his first year here, and like 116 games in the regular season, and you don't even make it to the World Series.
Dodgers won 111 a couple years ago. They didn't make it, you know? And with their young pitching, They just don't have an offense, and they don't have good ownership. And so I think for him, you know, we heard their general manager say, hey, you know, 52%, that's what we're looking
for. I'll say as a Padres fan, the outlook for the Padres is a hell of a lot brighter.
I think so, too. I agree.
But it's going
to
be...
You feel like A.J. Preller will do anything it takes. He will die trying the World Series roster and bring the trophy here to San Diego, whereas I don't know that Mariners fans have that feeling with their ownership and their GM.
Alex says, the Padres don't have a good offense either. 24 innings. No, they didn't have a good offense for literally 24 innings this season.
Before that, they had the best offense in baseball.
So, again, having your team knocked out because they didn't do what they'd done all year is really tough to stomach.
I do feel like part of me has the, you know, the doomer San Diego fan in me going, now you got to start back at 0-0.
It's
tough, dude. They're going to go through their struggles again next year. But part of me also goes, it'll be Mike Schilt's second year. He's already built the base. They will start at a higher level next year.
Hey, my dudes, how you doing?
Hey, good.
Then when they showed up at spring training, and, you know, totally candid, when we had dinner with Mike Schilt, he was not afraid to tell us, I don't think we're that good yet.
Yeah.
You know, but we will be good by the end of the year. And he was right. Yeah. He was absolutely right. They weren't very good at the beginning. They did get a lot better throughout the year. I would imagine that when he shows up at spring training, it's going to be in a much different place than he'll be like, okay, now we did all that last year. We start at this level. Let's try to continue to improve from there. I think the baseline is a lot higher for the Padres in 2025.
So are the expectations.
Yeah, the Padres met a lot of their goals this year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not picking them to finish 500 this year. I'm picking them to finish better than 500.
I would assume, I mean, wait and see what some of the moves are. But
for them to meet as many goals next year as they did year, like, it's kind of World Series or bust.
But Michael doesn't have to spend months, you know, installing his focus, his fundamentals, everything that he wants them to do. Most of these guys will be back, and they've already done it.
And a lot of that stuff actually can be better. You know, it can be better. There's always room for improvement, certainly.
I'm sure Mike Schilt would be the first to tell you that.
Yeah, no doubt.
Quickly, because you mentioned Ichiro and Hall of Fame. Did anyone change their Hall of Fame status in this postseason?
Ooh, good question.
And I'll bring up two names for you. Freddie Freeman probably was already headed there, almost certainly, but no one has ever won an MVP and a World Series MVP other than Pete Rose and not gone into the Hall of Fame. So if he wasn't a slam dunk already, which he probably was, he is now a 100% lock for the Hall of Fame. The other name I will bring up...
I already know. Hang on.
Ben, you do a great job.
Did Dave Roberts punch his ticket to the Hall of Fame?
Indeed.
With this postseason?
Indeed.
He very well might have.
He did.
I don't know that he did anything differently, but... And I don't know that he could have gotten in on simply one Dave Roberts World Series title. Yeah. But now he's got two on his resume. He's got a decade plus of, you know, highest regular season success, winning percentage. Yeah. Don't think they're going to be able to keep him
three
out
total?
At this point.
Three total?
Three if as a player. He had the one with the Red Sox, and then two
just
as a manager.
As a player? Yeah.
I don't think he's getting in for any of his playing accomplishments. He's going in as a manager.
That's a championship on the resume.
But it is part of the resume, and probably means that at some point he will be in Cooperstown.
Yeah, I thought a lot of moves he made, leaving Trinan in, I was like, well, he's dead here. Nope. Bueller to close the game. They're going to light them up. All I kept seeing on Twitter was the Dodgers don't have enough pitching to finish this game, and they made it work. And they picked their manager up, and he picked them up, and put faith in Blake Trinan. And Blake Trinan was absolutely nasty. And you know, it takes a lot of that World Series belongs to him, certainly. But you know, Dave did a really good job. He got in our dome, that's for sure.
R. Barker, 333, Mookie Hall of Fame, and certainly helped his argument as well.
Yeah, no brainer.
He's probably on that track also. So,
yeah,
and I would assume that Shohei is going to be there when all is said and done as well.
Agreed.
So,
agreed.
You know, that's a Hall of Fame laden roster.
Big time.
Not shocking that they won a World Series.
No, they were the favorites to win it. Don't get gaslit. They were the favorites to win it. They won it. Check cleared. They did it. You know, credit to them. And they exercised those demons.
All right. One thing I'm looking forward to in the offseason, maybe not as much Woods. I know Paulie is looking forward to it. is college basketball season.
Oh,
which
I'm excited about it.
Well, officially it'll be underway next week, but Aztecs did play last night.
It's weird. I'm looking forward to Aztecs basketball
season. Yeah.
And I guess...
And the tournament.
Mountain
and
West
the tourney, yeah.
in that
yeah.
regard.
Yeah.
Like, it's... I'm not going to sit down on a Saturday and watch the CBS game of the week.
Yeah, I don't either. In the regular season, I watch very little non-Aztecs college basketball until the tournament.
I'll watch any top college football matchup on a Saturday. It's just... There's a lot of schools, a lot of players. It's a lot to consume.
I like learning about them all in March, along with 80% of the rest of the country. Yeah. Like, oh, man, this is a St. Bonaventure? Oh, that's pretty cool.
But all in on the local team and the teams that we'll be playing for.
But sure. I had an eye-opening, viewing experience last night with what I saw from the Aztecs. I will share some of that with you when we come back after a check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan. So it's never a... great idea to take too much away from an exhibition game in any sport.
But you're about to.
That includes college basketball against a Division II opponent like San Diego State faced last night at Viejas Arena against Cal State San Marcos. So they were, physically superior, as you'd imagine, faster, much taller. But I was very impressed with what I saw. I watched almost all the first half. Key plays. We went out and shot some video of the game. It was not on television, but I was able to kind of see what the Aztecs were up to. And I was impressed. So the overall final score was 80-39. It was a 27-point game at halftime, which is what I set the line at 27.5 yesterday.
Yeah.
They covered that pretty much in the first half. Really just kind of kept it going all the way through. Got to see some of the new faces, including Magoon Gwath, he's the 7-footer or close to 7-footer who plays generally at the 3-point line. He made 1 3-pointer, but he also blocked 4 shots, and that was pretty interesting to see because he could go out from it wasn't just rim protection. He could go out and like block 3-pointers out on the arc. Did that a couple of times. That was very impressive to see one of the new Aztecs in action. Nick Boyd, who was the transfer from Florida Atlantic, had a really nice game. 18 points, led all scorers after having missed pretty much the last few months in a walking boot. Finally gets on the court and looked impressive last night for San Diego State. Dished out 3 assists, but a guy I wasn't necessarily expecting to see a lot from, but looked good, was Wayne McKinney, who was a USD player, transferred to San Diego State, and he was a shooting option for the Aztecs in that game yesterday. He shot over 50%, as did most of them. I think the Aztecs shot over 50% from the field in the game last night. So you saw a lot of contributions from some of the new guys, and even without Reese Waters, who again is out for a couple of months, they looked Woods like a team that had maybe more depth than even some of the teams we've seen the last couple of years that have made runs in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I mean that's not a shocker at all, from a Brian Dutcher built team, coach team. I did like this tweet I saw. You guys know Darnay Tripp?
NBC. I think I've heard of him.
Yeah, he's great.
Big fan.
Huge fan of Darnay. One of my favorites in this town. Period. The end. Darnay tweeted, crowd at Viejas got excited to see Magoon Gwath let fly from a couple feet behind the arc. It was an air ball, and he looked pretty bummed about it. Next time down the floor, he hoisted one and absolutely nailed it. The Goon experience is off to a thrilling start. He had some video of some of the ridiculously comical blocks from Magoon Gwath. He's going to be a blast to watch. Big dude. Tall dude. Just a beast. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. Especially, knowing that this is probably baseline and as he gets more comfortable with the system at San Diego State. But looks like defensively he's able to go in right away and play. One of the other new guys didn't really do much in terms, I don't think he scored at all. Jared Coleman-Jones missed all 6 of his shots, but did have 5 rebounds, and they're going to need the big presence that you've got to have if you're going to be successful in college basketball nowadays. But yeah, they had, I think, 10, 12 guys who played at least 10 minutes. And again, it's an exhibition game. Dutch is going to have to settle on a rotation and see which guys actually, when the season starts, are getting the real minutes in a game.
It's It's the same thing as, you know, your bullpen in spring training is going to look different than your bullpen at the break, right? You got to see what you got, and you got to see who steps up, and you got to see who stays healthy and all of that, and who's meant for the moments. It's the hardest part about coaching, I think, in college basketball has got to be excruciating. You know, like there's a couple of teams that can, they have the best players in the world. They can put them in the right rotations or whatever. But for a program like San Diego State, man, that's when you feel like that coach really gets his hands dirty. And he has to.
And one thing about Dutch is so many coaches, you know, have their system. And that's how you're going to play. And at San Diego State, obviously, it always starts with defense. But I feel like there's also a flexibility with Dutcher. Like last night, and maybe part of it was just being more athletic than the opposition, but there was more, you know, running, fast breaks, you know, it was a faster paced offense based on the personnel that Dutch has this year. Obviously, in recent seasons, it's been a lot slower. Last year, what was the offense? It was, you know, give the ball to Jaden Ledee.
Yeah.
You know, he'd just back guys in and just use his imposing physical force to you know, drive the San Diego State offense. But it's not going to be like that. It's going to look completely different this year.
And, like, we expected so much more from guys like Reese Waters. But maybe those guys, you know, I know he's hurt, but maybe those guys without a Jaden Ledee get a better chance to be more of a team. You know, Jaden Ledee was a superstar for the Aztecs. A man amongst boys, man, really. Like, so now, might have to play a little bit more team basketball.
Well, and guys like Miles Byrd and B.J. Davis, who didn't, you know, contribute a ton last year because they had they had to take a back seat to Jaden Ledee. They can step up now this year. It's the way of things in college basketball that, you know, the older guys clear out and then the younger guys get to see, all right, can I now take that step up into that new role?
It's a lot like radio, buddy.
And at San Diego State, for the most part, they have had that constant step up. That's what a program is. It's building, you know, guys that are ready to then take the place of the guys that leave.
Yeah, 100%.
And San Diego State, starting with Steve Fisher and now continuing here with Brian Dutcher, have done a really good job reloading, restocking the program. And I fully expect, you know, the Aztecs to once again compete, at least, you know, for the NCAA tournament and, you know, stay healthy and things are going well at the end of the season. Maybe they can, you know, make a run into the tournament again this year. Based solely on what I saw yesterday, I'm optimistic again about this San Diego State season.
You have to be every single year with Coach Dutcher at the helm. Coach Fisher, if you're listening right now, and I know you do listen to Ben and Woods, expect a text from Paulie in the next few days. Going to try to get Coach Fisher on next week.
Love to get his thoughts on this year's team, for sure.
Love that man.
Opener again is next Wednesday against UC San Diego. Then they get right into the teeth of the schedule. Gonzaga, woo! Creighton in that tournament in Las Vegas over Thanksgiving.
The old measuring stick.
Oregon, and then another good team they'll play no matter what on Saturday in that tournament, to be determined. So, yeah, I was worried with Reese Waters out. I thought, oh, and so many new players. This could be a team that doesn't looks a little disjointed. I've seen way more disjointed exhibition games from the Aztecs in years past than yesterday's. Actually looked kind of jointed yesterday. So good things from the Aztecs. All right, we'll get back to baseball when we return. One more smart baseball segment with Eno Saris to wrap up the World Series and the season. Brought to you by 7 Mile Casino. That is coming up next on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Eno Saris tweeted last night, just enough pitching. Congrats, Dodgers. I wonder, is that the minimum amount of functional pitching you can have and still win the World Series?
I think so.
Because they stretched it to the absolute limit last night.
Yeah.
And Eno pointed this out as well, that when they got through Blake Treinen, if they had gone to the bullpen, the only guys they had left were Kasperius, who started and threw 43 pitches in Game 4, Honeywell threw 50 pitches in the one inning, Knack, who threw 56 pitches in 4 innings, and Daniel Hudson, who had thrown 42 pitches over the past 2 days. So it was Buehler or someone who might not have had anything left in the tank, you know, for the Dodgers.
Yeah,
it worked out perfectly for them in the end.
It really did. It was crazy. I mean, it always blows up in their face, those moves, and it didn't.
We will talk to Eno right after this check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan.
It's time for the super polished, yet to be named Smart Baseball Weekly segment with Eno Harris. Saris, son of a bitch. Brought to you by 7 Mile Casino, just 7 minutes from the ballpark by the bay in Chula Vista. Here's Eno Saris with Ben and Woods on 97.3, The Fan.
So, Woods, you're always mad. Say, you haven't seen that movie? And it's true. I've not seen nearly as many as you have. There is a movie that I enjoyed from 1998 starring Gwyneth Paltrow. It's called Sliding Doors. You ever see that one?
Yes.
There is, so it's a movie about what, you know, two different paths that you can take.
Right.
And as we talk to Eno Saris here from The Athletic, you know, there's a very slightly different alternate universe in which this World Series looks very, very different.
Oh, yeah.
Than the one that played out for the Dodgers. One in which they lose game one, one in which they lose game five and are heading back to L.A. down 3-2 to the New York Yankees.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's such a complicated word. We've talked about it a lot on this show is luck. And, you know, I think when people think of luck, there's a lot of different things they think of. But one of the ways that it plays out in the series is, you know, Frankel, like, remember that fifth inning last night with, you know, I think it was the fifth inning with all the errors for the Yankees that just steamrolled on them. And just, like, sprinkle those errors throughout the game.
Right.
Instead of having them happen all at once, you know? And the Dodgers score one or two runs instead of five, you know, because you would expect, given their defense, maybe Judge drops a fly ball. He's not the best center fielder, you know? And maybe Cole forgets to run the first. But, like, you put those all into one inning, and you're just like, oh, no, it's disaster. And that definitely happened in that game. You know, there's other ways to think of luck, too, which is just like, you know, a certain call going one way or another, and then, you know, the pitcher gets out of the inning as opposed to, you know, what if Trina had walked that guy, you know, that last guy he had to get?
Yeah.
You know, then they have to bring out Buehler before that. And maybe Buehler is a little bit more tired because he's in reliever mode. It's like the bird flaps its the wings and, you know, things change. But so you can't really go into the alternate universes. But, you know, there's those games were tighter than the 4-1 series, you know, win for the Dodgers suggests, I think.
You know, and we had this conversation last year after the Padres lost and did not make the playoffs. And we talked about how nobody really knows anything, you know, and you covered the sport for a living and we do as well. And we talked about it this morning, like it's getting harder and harder and harder and harder to prognosticate. Now, it's very simple to say the Dodgers will win the World Series next year. We've seen great Dodger teams. I've had them to win the World Series the last 10 years and they hadn't until this one, you know, and it's just getting harder and harder to prognosticate. And from your perspective, I think we've talked about roster construction and stuff before. Yeah, I mean, you can't construct a roster. You can't construct a roster that, like, when you look at it, like, all right, we'll have one starting pitcher and then burn all of our bullpen. Like, it's so dumb that the best way to describe the sport and the weird things that happen is literally two words, and it's, that's baseball. And nobody likes to hear it, but that's absolutely the case.
Yeah. I mean, I struggle every year. Like, you know, you can't overlearn, right? Like,
right.
You can overlearn. Like, you can be like, oh, the key is, you know, a deep bullpen, you know, but there are different ways to win in this sport. The one thing I would say that both of these teams did that, you know, could be considered, you know, successful considering how many games they've won and they've been just into the World Series, they spend a lot of time and energy and resources on the lineup. And the Dodgers had the best offense in the postseason. Last year, the Rangers and Diamondbacks had the best offense in the postseason. And I think, you know, from my research, offense is the thing that's still the highest correlated with postseason success, which is, it's still not super highly correlated because the postseason is really hard to predict. But, you know, offense is important. And then the other thing is, if you look at their bullpens, a lot of them are built on minor trades, waiver wires, you know, failed starters within their own system. And, you know, I think that's the value of coaching. So, you know, I don't know who's graduating from the Padres pen.
They're losing Tanner Scott to free agency, but they're pretty much getting everybody else back, I think.
Your beloved Morihone will be back, yeah.
I think I would say to my R&D department, you know, find me three, you know, arms that you think Ruben Niebla, you know, can make into something better. You know, like find me three waiver wire arms. And that's how we're going to attack the bullpen. So, I mean, you know, they may have a money crunch as well. So that might be the best way to think about how to do it. But if you look at Luke Weaver was like a waiver claim that had just moved to the bullpen and had some velo. And then they taught him two or three new grips and boom, you have a closer, you know. So that's the kind of energy I would take to the bullpen, I think. And do whatever I can to keep that lineup near the top of baseball. Because, you know, another way of luck is saying, like, what if the Padres had hit, like, you know, one home run or two home runs those last games? What if they had any offense in those last games?
Yeah, just one run would have been great.
But the Dodgers did. Two solo home runs. That's all they had in that last game. I mean, yeah, it wasn't like they set the world on fire in Game 5. We're talking to, you know, Saris from The Athletic. And by the way, you know, Padres have done it with Jeremiah Estrada. Waiver wire claims will turn into a big, and then Sean Reynolds now could be in their bullpen next year.
That might just be the guy
as well. They're already on that path. I want to ask you. You talked about the lineup with the Dodgers, and it's one thing that, you know, as a Padres fan watching the Dodgers, the one thing I always dread is how good they are at commanding the strike zone, not swinging, not chasing at pitches out of the zone, and in your studies, Eno, is that something that a team can, like, work on and get better? I mean, I'm sure every baseball player wants to get better at not swinging at pitches out of the zone. You know, chasing, you know, Manny would love to not chase that slider that breaks into the left-handed batter's box. But, you know, you still end up doing it a bunch during the season. And, you know, the Padres were very patient in 2023. Didn't really work that well for their offense. This year they were more aggressive. It kind of worked better. But every time the Dodgers come in, I go, you know, it's going to be just a nightmare for the pitchers because it's going to be so hard. Every single batter is going to battle. How do they do that?
Yeah, you know, the Yankees and Dodgers were the two teams that chased the leads in the playoffs, so. And they were among the top five in the regular season too. So that is something they do well. It's a bit of a complicated thing as I've looked at it, because if you just look at chase rate itself, it doesn't actually correlate that well to other offensive stats. And the reason is that you can't be too passive. You can watch strike three, like you said about
Trent
the Padres
Grisham
in years past. Yeah, you can watch strike three. We talked about Trent Grisham to death there. So you can be too passive. The other thing is power lives out in front of the plate. And so being aggressive and getting that ball out in front has good power ramifications. I think what the Dodgers do really well is not just be patient, but go get things selectively. Like, you can actually get Max Muncy to chase something out of the zone, like a fastball out of the zone high. That's the book on him, right? But the reason he does that is because if you miss at all on a fastball high, he's got the type of swing where he deposits that in the bleachers. So, you know, they're selectively aggressive, and I think they're basically the Dodgers are the best team at advanced scouting and scouting in general. I know, here's a story. I was talking to a pitching coach on an opposing team, and he said, you know, I was trying to tell my guys what to do against the Dodgers hitters, and I was, you know, scouting the heat maps, looking for the blue zones, looking for this, and being like, oh, he's only this on this. And, you know, I came up with a game plan. I gave it to my pitcher. He went out there, and the Dodgers just shellacked him and seemed to know everything that was coming. So what the Dodgers do, not only do they scout the opposing teams, they scout themselves. And so when they talk to Freddie Freeman about the game tonight, they say, hey, they're probably going to do this. Like, we looked at you, and we decided that this is how we would attack you. If we were Clark Schmidt and we were pitching to you, we would do this and this and this. So watch out for this, this, and this. So they not only scout, you know, the other team, they scout themselves, and they do an amazing job of preparing. They have a traject, which is the newfangled hitting thing. And so they might even say, Freddie Freeman, go watch a bunch of Clark Schmidt sweepers on the outside corner, because he's going to try and you know, backdoor you with the sweeper or whatever. And so you can, like, prepare that way. So they have the best technology. and I think some of the best scouting in the big leagues.
Talking to our pal Eno Saris here on Ben and Woods this morning, and health, you know, notwithstanding the shoulder for Shohei, how do you see them? It's going to be a whole look. It's a great problem to have, but it's going to be a whole different headache for them next year. I mean, he's not going to hit 59 home runs next year. He's not. Because he's going to pitch, and that's deadly. I mean, he could win 20 games and hit still a damn good season for Shohei. But
they used to.
How do you think they're going to use him next year?
Yeah, they used to do the thing where he had to rest from hitting the day after he pitched.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they'll still do that. The one thing is that they'll probably, almost definitely go to a 6-man rotation because Yamamoto was on a 6-man rotation himself this whole year. And then you bring Ohtani back, you say, well, maybe we can get more out of you and get you deeper into the season with however many innings you have if we do six-man rotation. You have Glass now who's made of glass, so, do things exactly. and before. And
you've got Corbin Burns, let's just be honest.
Yeah, let's be
honest.
I know where
this is headed.
Everyone saw that. We have not brought that up yet, but there's got to be some sort of penalty. I don't know, Corbin Burns.
He's like the second this World Series is over.
Tweets the eyeball emojis after the Dodgers win. I'm like, are you kidding me? It's got to be some sort of tampering.
The funny thing is that the way this is set up, the Yankees and Dodgers both have a fair amount of coin in their pocket, and they've just made a bunch of money on the World Series, and they have similar needs because, I could see moving, they both have like they're a little bit soft defensively, the Dodgers and the Yankees are, in center and short. And, not necessarily short for the Yankees, both be fine, but like center and infield. And so if you move Jazz to center field, then you need a third baseman. If you move Tommy Edman to center or to short, you need the opposite, right?
Yeah.
And so I see them really setting up for them both to be bidding really hard on Willy Adames, the basically the only real everyday shortstop that's on the market. And Corbin Burns and Juan Soto, just because it's
Why
Juan
not?
Soto. So,
yeah.
I don't think the Dodgers are going to get Soto. How do you see the Soto play? How do you see it playing out this offseason? I mean, is it going to be fast? Is it going to be slow?
Yeah, I think it'll be Yankees Mets. And I think it'll actually take a while because, Boris loves to, wait it out. He's not worried that he waits too long and they have to take like a Blake Snell, Jordan Montgomery deal. Like that ain't happening.
Yeah.
So he's just going to wait as long as possible. It could be done during the winter meetings, but I spent the whole last winter meetings waiting for something to happen and nothing happened.
Yep. Same.
We in fact, we had to fill the airways just like you. We ended up just doing a bunch of interviews with people in the industry about how they got into the industry. Because
thanks for the idea.
There was no breaking news to be had. So, I think that, Boris is like, I don't care if I've had a couple mistakes along the way.
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep waiting because waiting has worked for me in the past.
It's a great call, man.
I don't think we're going to Texas this year for the winter meetings. But
we're not.
Eno, will you be there? Can you, can we count on you to be our correspondent then?
I will call in, and I'm not even I'm staying the extra Thursday, so if we just I can do a regular Thursday hit if that's what
you want. Now, can you promise me that you'll sprint from wherever you are before you call in?
So good.
Join us.
What I'll probably do, because it'll be the last day of the winter meetings, I'll probably answer in one of those I've been up all night drinking voices.
Oh, good. I like that too. Thank you so much for this season, bro.
Always a pleasure to talk to you every single week, and I do think our audience appreciates and enjoys it as well. So you take care, man, and thank you so much for
running
everything.
It back next year,
Yeah, we're running it back.
All right. I really enjoy talking to you guys.
Thanks buddy.
Eno, is that short for something? I always wondered.
No, I'm named after Brian Eno.
Oh,
who
nice.
Is, the producer of Talking Heads, YouTube.
Brilliant.
Good crossword puzzle word. Producer Brian Blank. You see that a lot.
It's really good. That's a good guy to be named after,
Yeah.
Better than like OJ.
Yeah, I had interesting parents. My middle name is Kama, like the Kama Sutra.
Oh,
wow.
Wow. Eno, I'd like to let's delve into that this off season, you know, and how much money you actually spend on therapy when your parents say, comma, K-A-M-A.
So, Saris, comma, Eno is Eno, comma, Saris.
That is that's unbelievable. I'll be thinking about that for the rest of the day.
I know, me too. Thank you, buddy. I'm glad I asked.
Appreciate it.
Talk to you later, Eno.
See you guys.
Later, bro.
Eno, comma, Saris. Kama Sutra, Kama Saris.
Kama Sutra.
Interesting.
I just figured it was like some sort of, you know,
abbreviation.
You know,
or,
ethnic, you know, ethnic Eno. No, Brian Eno.
Brian
How
Eno.
About that?
Very cool.
All right, we'll come back. Paulie's got a bald Rindle report for us on Halloween next here on The Fan.